It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Everybody, welcome to the Scottish Rugby Podcast brought to you by the Scottish Rugby Blog. I am Cammy Black. Joining me this evening, we've got almost a full house this evening. We've got John Anderson. Hello, John.
Hi, everyone.
We've also got Ian here. Good evening, Ian.
Bono estente.
We are currently live on Twitter, Twitch and YouTube, as well as a couple of other social media platforms as well. We broadcast the podcast live now and record it, and then we'll put it out for an audio download on podcast apps like Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Acast. We're also on Amazon Podcasts. If you say, hey Alexa, now that's going to have triggered someone's Alexa, so hey Alexa, play Scottish Rugby Podcast, it'll play it. We should maybe test that. If I go, hey Google, play the Macarena, see if that triggers someone's Google machine.
Maybe start coming up with different things like, hey Alexa, go to manscaped.com.
and enter the code SRP for 20% off and free shipping.
Bye.
Might just start doing that in the middle of podcast, just trying to trigger people's Alexa yeah, machines. Hey Alexa, play Bring Your Daughter to the Slaughter by...
nice tune. Should you play that one, Ian?
There you go. That's going to need some galloping bass.
This is, of course, Ian and John's band, which we're all... Have you got a name that you... John put out on Twitter earlier this week. What is this? A mix of glam rock, rock and thrash metal. Is that how you described it?
It's classic rock, glam, thrash, taking contemporary pop numbers and turning them into kind of thrash numbers as well, so a little bit of everything.
Is this one of these things where you turn around to us all now and say, oh, you wouldn't have heard of some of the bands that we're into?
No, you'll definitely have heard of them.
There's that obscure country artist Dolly Parton who we're covering.
Yeah. Turning Dolly Parton into thrash has definitely been the highlight thus far.
Martin Bell has asked, are we on Prime? Now, it is free to get. It is free to access our podcast on Amazon. We get no money from Amazon as a result of that. We get money from Acast to insert all the adverts into the podcast when you download it. If you don't want adverts on the podcast, however, you can pay £3 a month to enter the Richie Vernon Thunderdome on our Patreon, patreon.com/Scottish Rugby Podcast. Or you can upgrade and pay £5 per month and enter the Dougie Donnelly Members Lounge. You don't get anything extra for that other than just a warm and hearty virtual handshake from ourselves. Plus, we will read your name out on the podcast. So I've got a couple of thank yous. We've got a thank you to Craig Manson, who despite Ian's slurs against Howard Fife, which I had very quickly shut down last week. I've already had a complaint from Johnny McGinn to Ian.
Oh, I thought it was stuff about Edinburgh.
Okay. I'm not having it 2 weeks in a row. So Craig Manson, despite that, has signed up and he's entered the Dougie Donnelly Lounge for £5 a month. So thank you very much to him. That's our £5 patrons as well.
Do you know what else we should do for the £5? Like, we should do like Cameo and we'll send you a birthday message. You can pick the podcast star of your choice and we will send you.
Do you want to get, go on, guess how much do you think it is to get Max Evans to read you a birthday message on Cameo?
Oh, Max Evans, I mean, I don't know.
Be careful what you say next, Ian.
I know, yeah, I was about to make a joke there. I thought, no, I'll get us banned again. Depending on, you know, he needs a lot of money for stuff. £30.
That is almost spot on. It's £29.75, and you could probably get him to say Bing Bong for that, I'm guessing.
He will not be sending it via 5G.
No. I'll give you some other names that we've got. Lewis Moody. How much to get a cameo from Lewis Moody?
£75.
£42.50.
£24.90 is cheaper than Max Evans.
That's a bargain.
Shane Williams. Shane Williams, a birthday miss for Shane Williams.
He loves the BBC Bucks, so no, yeah, it's 67.50.
£124.50.
Small man, big price.
And we've all seen the state of his punditry, so you can only imagine how awful his birthday greetings are going to be.
I can categorically confirm Richie Vernon done it for free.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I can't think what else. I'm trying to think of something else that would be as wooden as Shane Williams' birthday greetings that cost you £124.
A pirate's leg.
That's it, yeah, probably.
One of the Ents in Lord of the Rings.
Tim Visser, go on. Price for how much do you think it would cost for Tim Visser to say happy birthday to someone?
He's got expensive tastes in shirts, so, and he does love that London life.
45.
Nah, 110.
Absolute bargain at £16.60.
16? Whoa. There we go. So we could get Tim Visser.
There's another joke in there about adding 30 pence and him being Dutch, but I'm not going to use it.
I'll give you two more. DTH Van der Merwe.
Seems like a classy guy. Tenner.
30.
£12.45.
What?
Last two now. Nick Grigg. Everyone's favourite plasterer. That's what he looks like. He looks like he should be around plastering your walls rather than playing centre for Glasgow.
So a plasterer, how much are they an hour usually? Just divide that by how long the video is.
£66 an hour.
Plus the parts, mate. You forgot the parts.
Oh, parts and parts labour. £20 for Nick Grigg.
£16.60.
How? By the way, how?
So it's the same price as Tim Visser.
I'm trying to find one more. Hugh Jones. The lovely, beautiful Hugh Jones. Oh. How much for a birthday message on Cameo from Hugh Jones? I mean, we're doing them a favour because I reckon it must be done by popularity. So I reckon you start low and the price bumps up. So how much for...
24.
You're going 24. Higher or lower than 24?
£7.50.
£12.45 and Hugh Jones will say whatever you want. Within reason, I reckon.
Would just like to point out, it is my birthday on the 4th of December. So if anyone wants to get me a message from Hugh Jones, please.
I wonder if some of them are converted from euros, like 20 euros.
Must be dollars. I think it's dollars. I'm guessing it's Cameo's an American thing. I'm guessing it's dollars.
They actually used to be 100 quid, but because of various things, they're now only worth 16.
I will say there is actually not a Cameo thing, but there's a rugby version of Cameo. I'm trying to find the name because we're trying to do something with it. It's Moonrise Rugby. If you go on Twitter and find them, we're trying to do some stuff with them, but lockdown kind of has put kibosh on it. But if you go to Moonrise Rugby, you can actually get some genuine... There's lots of Scottish rugby players on there and they'll give you coaching tips. So you can send footage of yourself doing kicking or passing or tackling. And then you'll get written feedback from them, or you can have a half an hour consultation with them and a wee chat. I think Adam Hastings is on there, which is probably a bit more worthwhile than paying, Max Evans £29 to hear him say bing bong. I mean, you can. There's videos of that on the internet if you want to go googling hard enough for it.
The Jim Telfer one comes back really profane. So you need to just
if you want to feel really
you
bad,
pass.
Maybe if you're into BDSM. And you just want to have elderly men shout at you and tell you to work harder. Then you go, you sign up for Jim Telfer on Cameo.
Jim Telfer shouts, come into my dungeon. And
what
then
are you doing with your life? You're a disgrace.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, yes. So that's it. So if you're a member of the Patreon, you want us to do a wee video message, we'll do that for you for free. If that's something you'd like us to do, if people actually want us to do that, if we do that. But yeah, if you sign up, you get ad-free content, so you get a version of the podcast with our adverts inserted. We do
and
mini...
for an extra five, or Cam will do you a jingle.
I will do, yeah. If you want to pay an extra five, I will do jingles on demand if people pay enough. You also get mini versions of the podcast, because sometimes we ramble on. Some people like it, some people don't. So if you sign up the podcast, you get one that's somewhere between half an hour and 40 minutes where I basically cut out the rambling at the start where we talk about how much it costs to get Tim Visitor to say happy birthday to you. And then the bit at the end where we do Hands in the Ruck and it somehow adds about half an hour of content.
If you're not listening to that, though, you're missing gold. This is top quality content.
Basically, what I've worked out with the mini podcast is we talk about rugby for about half an hour and the other like 45 minutes is just nonsense.
Crap. 45 minutes to an hour and a half.
We're 12 minutes in and we've mentioned rugby players, but barely any rugby.
Nick Gregg's debatable.
That includes the intro, though, as well, doesn't it?
It does include the intro, to be fair, which is a 3-minute song. So, yes, so that you get that on the pitch, and you also get exclusive monthly content. We're a little bit behind on that. I'm going to get something out next week on Scotland's Hardest Players. Basically, we've had a bit of a lockdown domestically in our house, which has kind of put a bit of a kibosh on things this month. But hopefully, we'll be back up and running this week.
I was concerned you were going to say you've had a lockdown domestic.
No. We've had a domestic lockdown. We've had our youngest had two consecutive back-to-back periods of self-isolation because somebody at nursery got the Rona. So he's been at home. The rest of us could move about freely and at will, but he was stuck in the house, bless him, for 4 weeks. So,
John can't go and jam now on Sunday.
No, that's, of course, because of the announcements today, because I am out with the Glasgow region.
Oh, different health board region.
I'm served by the Bold Renfrewshire, so.
Could you not, what happens, can you not like register for a GP within the area just so you can go band practice? Is that not how it works?
I need to form a bubble with Ian for the next 2 weeks.
Can you not kind of claim some sort of caring responsibility for him?
Which one of us? I know. Don't answer that.
Yeah. Anyway, what you also don't hear in the podcast is the Patreon podcast is us talking about the fact where we have partnered with Manscaped.com, who are sponsoring the podcast.
I forgot to put the t-shirt on.
Ian's forgot to put the t-shirt on. That's fine. Two of us ago. We've got our Manscaped t-shirts on.
Or I could just put my balls out.
Ian has been threatening him to do a live demonstration, but I've put the brakes on that pretty sharpish. So, Manscaped.com is the new to the UK. They do gentlemen's grooming products, grooming products for anybody. We've discussed this, really anybody that would want to clip and shave and trim in any places. You get they've got this wee Manscaped trimmer. They do nose trimmers as well. You can get a package like this that they sent me and John. All got this nice wee wash bag, some ball reviver. Don't know what that does. Apparently, it's ball deodorant and ball reviver. It's good for the hands, chafed hands after drumming and bassing.
It was discussed last week. Very, very good. I also found after I shaved my head the other day that I gave myself a wee scoosh up here, and it was rather pleasant. It's got some nice aloe vera in it. So, multi-purpose.
Maybe we could sell a multi-pack to Blade Thompson.
Well, the whole Blade Thompson thing, there's been chatter about my look just now and Blade Thompson and how we are channeling Blade Thompson, and there was perhaps suggestion that I am a Lego man version of Blade Thompson.
Blade Thompson wears John Anderson pyjamas, that's all I'm saying.
I know this.
We talked, I mean, the last 2 weeks we've talked about the fact Manscaped have got, they partner with a men's health charity that on testicular cancer. So we talked about that the first week we did this. Last week we had a wee chat, Ian and I had a wee chat about body image and the fact you don't have to shave if you don't want to. You know, whatever it takes to be the sexiest version of you from your own point of view, not what anybody else thinks, you do you. Like I say, I'm not into manscaping. I'm comfortable in my own body. If you want to manscape, that's fine by me, fine by everybody else. Do what's right for you. We also this week I thought we touch on, and this is from Manscaped as well, athletes who manscape for performance, because there is an argument that it can, so I don't think aid your performance, but can make it more comfortable. Some of the examples they give is Darian the Wolf Caldwell. I don't think he's a relation to Gary Caldwell. He's an MMA fighter.
All right, okay.
He's an avid manscaper. Apparently, he explains his manscaping is for MMA professional fighters. Performance. Unlike bikers or swimmers, he isn't doing it for speed. Instead, he follows the same motivation as the rest of fighters in his league. Body hair gets in the way. He says, especially true with grappling, I can imagine the less you've got to get hold of an MMA, the better. He says, shaving the chest and belly is essential for minimizing the opponent's grip in the tussle.
Wow.
Yeah, because imagine if like someone gets a hold of that and then yanks, that's going to hurt like hell.
Yeah. Bruce Aitchison says he manscapes for performance.
And what an outstanding performance it is.
We had a PE teacher back in Butte who was a rugby player and then took up cycling. And he decided he was quite a hirsute gentleman, and then he decided to go full performance and manscaped. And he used to wear shorts a lot at his classes, and it was smooth as a baby's bum. It was magnificent.
Glistening,
yeah, shining. And he took great pleasure in telling us all about the performance gains he'd made. Apparently he knocked 55 seconds off his PB just from shaving his legs.
Well, there you go.
What distance? So that was 100 meters. So
doing the road to the co-op.
Who's back quicker with the milk?
Well, it might be because there was no queue, actually. Hang on.
Well, Bruce is saying that PE teachers are the greatest. I think this is... Bruce, you'll have to confirm if this is a common thing for PE teachers.
Whether
they
manscape
sport.
For performance. I think before you go any further, let's not ask the question of whether PE teachers manscape for performance. Because that's... don't think that's necessarily a market that the manscaper look in the corner.
It was good while the relationship lasted. Eh?
anyway, there's a couple. So I'm moving swiftly on from that. There's a couple of NFL players that manscape. Is Michael Brockers apparently and Julian Davenport. I'm assuming they're sponsored by Manscaped. It's about comfort for them. You need every small advantage you can find. That's what they reckon. They claim that, you know, letting your bush grow free and uninhibited, it tangles and it tugs. The average man working a slow-paced office will have to adjust for comfort more than 100 times a day. Whereas you don't have to do that apparently if you shave. I'm not sure if that's true. I've not got a test subject to... I've not got anything to compare that against.
I think the people who are having to adjust 100 times a day might have to go and see a doctor.
It does seem quite excessive.
It does a bit.
We're back to the PE teachers. I certainly hope PE teachers aren't adjusting 100 times a day in front of the kids. Anyway, I'm not entirely sure. This is a bit off script for what they sent through to us. I don't know if this is the chat they want us to have. However, if you go to manscaped.com and you enter the code SRP, you can get 20% off and free shipping. So the code's going to be run along the bottom of the screen there. So it's coming to Christmas, so... maybe you want to treat yourself or treat somebody special in your life, then check it out. Like I said, there's things like nose hair trimmers, there's other kind of men, gentlemen's products that you can have a look on there. They're new to the UK, lots of interesting stuff on there. Let's move on. Let's talk about some actual rugby then, gentlemen.
Okay, but because we're on Amazon, we need to spend most of the time talking about England.
Right, so what did we think about Joe Marler's hotel room?
I didn't care, I just asked for
Should we start with the Amazon thing? Should we do it now rather than Hands in the Ruck, or do you want to wait for Hands in the Ruck?
I think that's fair. Let's get out of the way. Yeah. This is what it means to us.
I'll let you two go. I mean, the live coverage, I watched the game the following day, so I didn't watch it as live, but I skipped through a lot of preamble that seemed to have very little to do with Scotland, and given some of the messages we've had through, had a lot more to do with Joe Marler's hotel room than anything else. Is that fair?
Yeah. I thankfully had got the time of kickoff wrong. I was racing about trying to get a clear run at the game, and I did note Mr. Marler's hotel room in the background. But I thankfully wasn't really needed. I needed to be getting other things done, so I didn't pay much attention to it. But I did notice I think there was some comments coming through that maybe a couple of minutes before kickoff, we were still talking about England, and they actually had to like break away from Dylan Hartley giving some insightful nonsense to cut to what was obviously an insignificant game of rugby. So yeah, a bit weird.
I don't think half time. I mean, for the replay, they just cut all half time chat out. It just goes straight from the players come off the field to kickoff, which caught me by surprise because I went to make a cup of tea thinking I'd get a bit, I'd have a bit of time, and I came back and it was at 5 minutes in the second half, so I had to rewind it. But I don't, from what I've heard, I don't think I missed much, Ian, other than more talk about England versus Georgia.
No, I also missed most of the start. But I was in the facilities brushing my teeth and what have you. But I could hear the chatter, and it was all just England chatter. And then I've watched it back today, and there is, like, you fast forward, it gets to, they start talking about, you know, Gabby Logo does the intro, they talk about England, then they cut to, I think it's Joe Douglas and Johnny Beattie for all of 2.5 minutes.
I mean, that must be, how much has Johnny Beattie made for that? That must be a killing per. But what's he getting paid per hour?
Price, I know. Yeah. from what I remember at halftime as well, it was just more, they discussed tries, but then there was a bit more, but of course after this, we've got the England game. And then because the match overran, there was no post-match analysis. Mm-hmm. And it just went straight to back to Twickenham.
I love that they said the match overran. They emphasised it overran massively. It really totally overran. Yeah. It's like, guys.
It didn't overran. There wasn't any stoppages at all, really.
Pledri, Tommy Allen.
But even the Allen thing, it wasn't a long period of kind of players messing about. It was a short, quick turnaround between. So you wonder whether or not that's just, I mean, but it's Sunset and Vine, I think, that are doing the production. So they're inexperienced at doing rugby. So whether or not it's Amazon putting demands on the production, I don't know. I hadn't realised this, but Jamie Lyle and John Barclay and Rory Lawson were in Twickenham doing the commentary for it, though.
Is that right?
Rather than Italy. But I guess that's a COVID thing, right? That's about having their own bubble, not sending any more people across Italy than you absolutely need to. Mm-hmm.
But could they not? Well, I mean, I don't know where they all live, but could there not have been a more centralised location?
In Murrayfield.
Yeah.
Well, really, I think they all live. They all live. I think. Well, Jamie. I think Jamie's based up in Scotland, and yeah.
Yeah, just meet up at the Trafford Centre. The Wetherspoons is good.
Wetherspoons is never good, John.
That's a good point for Martin Bell, though, that the extensive England preview was more entertaining than the England match itself. I mean, three or 4 hours of preview for what was an absolutely dreadful match.
And it always was going to be a dreadful match. There was no doubt about that. Like, no one ever thought Georgia were going to give them anything other than a wee tickle here and there. It was dreadful. Yeah. And it's like they're trying to hype up this match like it actually, like, I get, right, okay, it's first game of the Open Nations Cup for them and stuff like that, and that's fine, and no match is meaningless, although we have had arguments in the past, Ian, with certain folks regarding whether a match is meaningless or not. But this was as close to in international rugby, this is as close as you get to a meaningless fiction. Yeah. Like, they're going to scud them, and we know that, and that's fine.
Yeah. So Ali's revealed just very quickly saying, are we going to talk about Argentina? We will likely get on that in Hands in the Ruck. I mean, the commentary was good. I got text from my dad complaining about how many metaphors Jamie Lyle was thrown about.
He was
fair
shoving them in, wasn't he?
He was. Yeah. But I think that's his style, and he settled down, I think, as the game wore on. But it was a good... It's good to have, a good, nice young commentator coming through the ranks. I thought he did really well. John Barclay and Rory Lawson, it's they're as good as anybody else in terms of the summarising. I thought the commentating was good. I didn't have the option watching it back to turn off the crowd noise, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't
trouble
try
even
it.
Getting a menu for that, because it was, when I went into the audio options, it just said like English US or English.
There's various options you can choose from. So you can drop the crowd noise, and you can drop the commentary altogether and just listen to it. So I think if I'd watched it live, I would have had the crowd noise off, because I quite like hearing what the the chat is on field. You I assume most of the reason the crowd noise is on, kind of drawn out the swearing.
That you just heard Luke Pearce prattling on.
We'll come on to that. We'll come on to that. We'll come on to that, no doubt, when we talk about the game. But I mean, overall, it was all right. I think the problem I had with the highlights, though, and the watching the game back, is it took you to a page for the game, and then it gave you the first thing you see is full match replay, extended highlights, try, and actually, if you go on the app on your phone, it tells you who scored the try. So there's massive. I don't understand why they can't have that in a separate, you know, highlights menu. But luckily, I only saw try, so I knew there'd been at least two tries in the game, but I didn't know who they'd been by. But if I'd opened it on the phone app, I would have seen the name of every single try score, and I could have worked out the score from there. So that's not so good.
So if you're on your phone, watch out for spoilers. That's what we're telling you.
But however, watching it back, that would if I'd knew the score, it would have been really handy because I could have just gone and watched. If I'd watched the game already and wanted to just go back and watch the odd try, then that would have been actually quite helpful. So that's good.
And if you hadn't watched the game and you knew the score, you would have known not to worry in that first half.
Yeah. Now, I said last week we need to stop worrying about Italy, and when I checked my phone, because I had my phone away hidden, so I wasn't tempted to look at it during the game. It was I think it was Ali Baxter tweeted to say, "Cammy Black, we need to stop worrying about Italy." Probably about halftime, I think he tweeted me. I still stand by that, and I didn't know the score when I watched the game, and I wasn't watching it live, but I didn't know the score. I think anybody that saw Italy versus England the week before would know that, you know, Italy are in games for about 60-70 minutes at least 60 minutes these days, and they put on a good show. I was confident that Scotland would see that game out. I mean, the end result, what was it? 1-4.
Yep.
And that's, I know the score looked a bit closer because we gave away some daft penalties, but that's as much down to Italy forcing the penalties as anything else. But I still didn't really feel, I don't know whether you guys watching the game live, I still never really had the sense that Scotland were going to lose that match, Ian.
No. I think 5 years ago, 5-10 years ago, we probably would have. Mm-hmm. But like I think you mentioned last week, Scotland now are very good in the second half. They figure teams out. Whether that's, you know, something Tooney talks about at halftime, but even if it is something he necessarily points out, the fact is the players then go out and, you know, activate that plan. Italy were very impressive in that first 40 minutes. You know, they hit everything with, you know, ferocity. They were tremendous at the breakdown, especially that boy Danilo Franchitti, was that it, the Loosehead?
Yeah, Loosehead was fantastic, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I was a wee bit concerned, but as soon as Scotland got a foothold in the game, sort of around about the 50-minute mark, you know, the confidence just seeped back. It's like, yeah, I think we've got this now. Everything just sort of picked up a level.
Yeah.
And we got the job done.
Yeah, I mean, there's talk, John, I think, that Gregor Townsend had come and given them a rock up the bum at halftime and kind of said they were maybe being a little bit complacent. And there definitely wasn't the same energy there as there had been against Wales on the pitch, and you couldn't hear anybody whooping and hollering from the bench either. But I guess there also wasn't much to whoop and holler about when you're not winning. They weren't winning the breakdowns. They weren't winning the scrums. They scored a good try, but there wasn't an awful lot to kind of get excited about from on the pitch.
Yeah, I think it was. It was a quiet first half, and I think losing Sutherland so early as well kind of set maybe a tone. He obviously went off, he looked quite bad nick, and then losing Jamie Ritchie as well. I think there was maybe an element of reorganisation at the breakdown that didn't happen in that first half, and it did set the tone for Italy were winning, as Ian says, winning contacts. There wasn't much energy, and the players that you'd normally expect to be kind of generating that didn't seem to be there either, but there was almost, in some ways, it was almost like Italy were doing a lot of shouting and cheering, but there was almost a kind of cool head sort of thing going on, where it's like, right, well, yeah, you can shout and whoop and do what you need, but let's just take our time here, guys. There's lots of time on the clock, and I was quite impressed with you know, obviously the response to two, we went down the two penalties and then we scored the try and then we conceded again. And there just wasn't any panic. We weren't forcing things. Things weren't coming off, and we were still the second best team in that first half, but there wasn't any, nobody looked, apart from maybe Stuart Hogg, no one looked like they were trying to force things, which was good.
Yeah, and I guess because that's there was no sense of panic from Scotland, yeah. I guess Ian, there was definitely a sense of a confidence within them that they knew that it was in a game of 80 minutes, so things weren't going though. I mean, there was a couple of needless penalties. I think maybe that the Cummins penalty where I think in the first half where he thought the ball was fair game. I think he thought he'd released the tackler and he's come in to nab the ball and he's been pinged for it. Now, you watch it back and he probably has an argument for the fact that he was in the right. However, it's maybe not the area of the park to be testing that out.
Yeah, I don't think he's looked back to see that the ruck's been formed, because I think it's one of the few times Luke Pearce didn't, you know, love the sound of his own voice and shout that the ruck had been formed. So yeah, he's just instinctively turned around and meant to grab it. I thought as well, he was very pernickety regarding line-out jumping and any interference in the air. So the Blade Thompson one at the start of the second half, yeah. I mean, you can say, I mean, Thompson should maybe have realised that he was being very sort of strict on that aspect and not go near him, but I think it was either him or Haining gave away a penalty for interference, and it was basically like their chest brushed the arm of the Italian player.
Yeah, there was a really weird one. I think it was the first half where Haining got pinged for rolling away, but he got pinged. He was back in the defensive line by the time he got pinged. So you're like, well, yeah. Like he can't be not rolling away if he's managed to roll away, get back in the defensive line by the time you've made that decision. Yeah. And there was a lot of, I think, and this is, I suppose, where it comes down to the adaptation. It's easy to adapt to a referee who's been consistent and making clear calls and has a clear interpretation. I'm not necessarily sure that Luke Pearce had that all the time. There wasn't a consistency in his decision-making, and that must be quite hard to adapt on the pitch.
I think that's fair. I think it took them the first half to kind of work out generally what he was doing, and there was a couple of sort of very strange precedents that he was setting, and they were trying to, you know, with the line out stuff and things like that, and they did eventually adapt to that. But I think there's an element of Italy were just better at the breakdown in that first half as well, and I don't agree with Luke his decision making necessarily, but that's still up to the players to kind of not get themselves, where possible, not get themselves in those positions. And Scotland were, particularly with ball in hand, we were loose. We weren't, you know, the Italian defence was winning collisions, and it makes it so much easier for they were getting Pelledri in particular, and your big Lucy there, Ian. They were getting right over the ball quite quickly, whether they were releasing or not. You know, it's apparently that's the new interpretation seems to be that the tackler can just kind of roll the person back to them. Although Watson does it better than anyone, so
yeah, you can't complain too much if you get the green as well.
It's only when Edinburgh were playing Glasgow that I was complaining.
I suppose we have to give credit to Italy, and it you know, this helps Scotland in a way that they'd done their homework on Scotland. And the attacking shape that we run, and it's maybe the first time we've properly had that tested. And I mean, certainly there was the one where Chris Harris got tackled on the ground, and there was a couple of players that had looped, rather than going into the ruck, had looped round looking for the offload, and that was clearly a set move. But the problem is Italy had read it, blocked off the pass, and all of a sudden Chris Harris is isolated. So they've definitely done the homework on Scotland, and that's not necessarily a bad thing going forward, because, you know, I'd rather it was Italy that had done the homework and Scotland now have time to correct things than it was France had done the homework and tore us apart next week, Ian.
I think they would have maybe made a better fist of the limited opportunities that Italy had. Because, I mean, let's think, like, people go on about how Italy were very good. Let's not forget that. But I think people have maybe overstated their performance a bit, because in terms of territory, you know, first half was pretty even. Second half, most of it was played in Italy's half.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I suppose it's good to know that teams take us seriously and do their homework. But Italy had only conceded, by the time Cummings scored, the penalty that Watson got, which Pierce took an age to blow for, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
That was only Italy's sixth penalty, and that was in the 65th minute. So that's good discipline, which usually we probably don't see from Italy, and that's why, you know, all the points came from tries. But we got there,
and that's a big thing. That's a big thing, isn't it? That we got there, and with a bonus point as well, which is not to be sniffed at.
Yeah, I was surprised a couple of times when Hogg went for the touch, but then I'd forgotten about the bonus points, to be honest.
I was frantically trying to figure out whether bonus points were a thing.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of... I mean, I thought it's hard to kind of... Rory's done the player ratings. I think Rory Sutherland went off with his, you know, with his ankle, and that, I think the reason that scrum went backwards at such a rate when Italy got the penalty was probably because his ankle went quite early on in the scrum, and that's the reason why it was going back, because it didn't go backwards again. It wasn't like a problem after that.
No. I hope so. Because I was quite quick on the group chat that we have outside us. I was quite quick about the man shaming that was going down there. But yeah, obviously you get carried off after that. So yeah, I think you'd very rarely see an international pack go back that quickly without something having went pretty horribly wrong. And
yeah,
I think that looked like an injury beforehand.
Yeah. I suppose the question is that obviously I think the Jamie Ritchie going off early maybe exposed an issue on the bench that there isn't, you know, that Townsend might have to address, that without a kind of another fetcher on the bench, it kind of, like you were saying, it took Scotland a while to then readjust, because the reason they did so well against Wales, they were sending in Ritchie, Watson and Ferguson into almost every single ruck trying to nick the ball. And if, you know, Nick Haining, for all, you know, all these good qualities, isn't a fetcher. So that obviously took some adjustment. And I don't know if there's an argument there to say that you need somebody a bit more versatile, because there was definitely an improvement when Haining got subbed for Sam Skinner later on in the game, Ian.
Yes, and we need to find out if that was an injury or if it's just a total ready for Haining that a sub then gets subbed. But Skinner's, I think Skinner's probably a bit more, even though he's a lock, you know, he's a bit younger and he's that kind of lock back row hybrid player, so he's probably a bit more mobile. And you know, you bring someone like him off the bench, you know, a European champion, he's going to go about and start hurting people.
Yeah. He's put a lot. He looks big.
Yeah,
he's a scary looking dude.
He's very scary looking. We haven't had a scary looking dude like that in a while, so that's good to see. The centre partnership is always interesting. We'll come back to Donkey Weir in a minute, but the centre partnerships with. Obviously, you got Sam Johnson back, Ian. I thought I was surprised that some people didn't think he'd had a good game. I thought he had a really good game in defence and attack. Actually, I thought he carried well. He made his tackles. I think we've seen that, you know, Scotland's centres are liable to slip tackles, but I think that's more down to the defensive structures than it is down to the individual players. Because it can't always be that it's the two centres that are slipping tackles. That's just got to be down to a tactical decision in defence rather than anything else. But I thought Johnson had a very good game. I thought Harris as well, again, it kind of, you know, showed up really well all over the park.
I mean, obviously there's been disagreement, and one thing I keep seeing is that people query Johnson's pace. They're like, is he fast enough to be an international 12? Just because he got snaffled. But I mean, it's not one of his forties. It's not his particular skill. He's a better defender than, say, someone like Matt Scott, who is that bit quicker. You know, it all seems to send back to that intercept he did against Ireland, and because he couldn't run away from a winger, people now automatically think he's slow. And then there's another one when Hogg spread the ball out wide. He got caught, but that was by a winger. So I don't know exactly how fast people want Johnson to be. but yeah, again, you know, I thought he was very solid. You know, he is an excellent. You know, he hits hard. You know, if he is going to attack you, you're going to feel it. Harris, at first I thought Harris had maybe, some people maybe overrated him slightly, but I watched again today and, you know, again, there was, similar to when we played Wales, Hogg tried to release him and he's fumbled the pass, but it's maybe not the greatest of passes from Hogg, but the rest of the game, you know, he's putting his tackles in. He's really good at sort of retrieving spilt balls. He seems to have a good sort of spatial awareness and sense of danger. And, you know, he carries it into contact pretty well. So, yeah, I thought he had a decent game, a very decent game.
I think the thing, and this is the thing, John, maybe the frustrating things with some Scotland fans is they're very quick to make their minds up on a player based on one performance and will not have that view of that player shifted despite all evidence to the contrary. So we know that Chris Harris is a player who's taken his time to kind of, you know, to find his feet at national level. He had a bad game, I think, when he came on against Samoa in his debut. He had that awful game that nobody came out of with any credit against Wales a few years ago. Yep. But since then, he's been very consistent and is growing into being he has nailed his name to the back of the 13 shirt for Scotland. I think there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and he fits what Townsend's trying to do, game plan wise, very well. I like Ian says. I think what you get with Harris is there will be one handling error per game, and it's frustrating. But you know, he runs really hard lines, and you've got to take the fact is that if you're running full tilt into an international defence, sometimes you may well spill the ball because they tend to hit you very hard. And Harris does cut some really good lines. He seems to link quite well, despite, you know, we've had two opportunities now where Hogg's maybe not put him in, but he seems to be linking better with the playmakers in the team as well. So, yeah, I think he's there, and I think it's the pragmatic approach of Townsend. We'll see that Harris will be in that shirt for quite some time to come. And I think, as you rightly say, Scotland fans need to get over the fact that people have maybe rubbish debuts, or maybe, you know, their second cap isn't so good, or it takes them 10 caps to feel at home. You know, Duncan Taylor was a liability on his first few caps for Scotland and did not look at all very international class. And, you know, we then revelled in his brilliance for a couple of seasons. There's been plenty of players over the years who maybe just have taken their time. Hugh Jones, on his debut, didn't exactly look a world beater. And then, because I remember when he was picked for his second cap was the Australia game, and I remember seeing his name and thinking, all right, okay, right. Townsend's pulling one of these ones, fine, all righty. And then he scored within like 7 minutes, and it was just like, all right, this guy's the greatest player in the world ever for some reason.
Yeah. Speaking of the greatest player in the world ever, Paul O'Connell has selected Duncan Weir as the starting 10 in his Lions selection, which I thought was a joke. Somebody had mocked up, but genuinely, this is that Paul O'Connell for the official British and Irish Lions selection has put Dunkey Weir at 10. Now, I think that that is throwing some serious shade the way of the other 10s that were starting for Wales, Ireland, and England this weekend. He had an all right game. Look, you know, he's Scotland's third/fourth choice 10. He did okay. He slipped the tackle. Yeah, he missed the tackle for the, you know, that led to the Italy try. I thought he was a little bit too keen in defence, rushing out occasionally and got caught out a couple of times where maybe actually, you know, a little bit of more of a cool head. But by the end of the game, he kind of seemed to have found his way a little bit, John. And you forget that with Duncan. It's been a while since he's played international rugby. I mean, he's been on the bench, he's come off the bench, but you know, to play a full 80 at international rugby, it's been a while.
Yeah, he looked nervous to start with, and that, and obviously people were trying to maybe take some of the responsibilities off him. Hogg seemed quite keen to do everything for him, which I'm not entirely sure I agree with, but you know, that would have been discussed beforehand, and I would not be surprised if it's, you know, been pre-agreed that Hogg will kick, they'll do the kick-offs and Hogg will kick to touch and what have you. I think what was interesting about Weir, he was really keen in defence, and he'd almost channeled his inner Sam Hidalgo Klein and was like looking for turnovers at every opportunity. And I'm thinking, Dunk, like, right, you've not got a neck. That's fine, right? So that's not going to get injured if you win Jacklin. But what are you doing? You know, and even if we do turn it over because you've put your meatball head in there, then what are we going to do? What, you know, our playmakers in rocking, it's it takes the idea of maybe Townsend's thrown as a curveball and maybe he is the rugby equivalent of Johan Cruyff and he is introducing total rugby to the world. There is no positions anymore. There is only meatballs.
Oh, you're sounding a bit Eddie Jones there, John.
Yeah.
Well, I'd speak to Gregor. He's the man who has Donkey Weir playing seven.
Darcy Graham would play any position you put him in.
Another example, yeah. Darcy, the smallest man in the park, seems to think that he is, you know, Xander Fagerson. And you know, sure I said that correctly. Unlike Mr. Barkley.
Yes. I think that that's the thing. I've been really frustrated with the Eddie Jones things. The kind of comments about, oh, I'm going to make backs have hybrid backs and forwards, and it's like, well, you know, there's been teams. The All Blacks have done that for decades. Scotland, we've been doing that since at least the Vern Cotter came along and, you know, have an interchangeable back. I mean, Richie Vernon, you know, has been doing that his entire career. It's not new or innovative, just but because the head coach of England says that all of a sudden the England journalists have fallen over themselves to kind of hail him as some sort of maverick when all he's doing is repeating stuff that other people have done long before him.
But then he never does it either.
No.
Well, that's it. Yeah, it's all talk, no action.
No. I mean, Sam Hidalgo climbing off the bench again, very good. You know, the turnover at the end, like something out of the Premiership final where he won the final turnover of the match.
This one was legal. One was legal.
Well, actually, the first, you know, there was those two mall drives that were repelled. Like, I think he went in during the first one. He went in for a turnover as well and nearly got to it. So
he's
thirsty for that ball.
Yeah. But again, that's good. I mean, we've joked about, you know, Sam Hidalgo Klein's littlest hobo-like career, you know, sometimes changing three clubs in one season, you know, but it's never a good look.
He's learning new skills.
That's it. But to have ended up at Exeter and to have nailed down the nine shot in, you know, England's best team and be a European championship on the back of what was a move forced by coronavirus is pretty impressive. And now to be in a situation where we've got three very good scrum halves who can play for Scotland, and Jamie Doby coming through as well. I'm not going to mention the Edinburgh scrum halves, but because I don't rate them much yet.
Scott Steele as well.
Who did well at kind of filling off the bench as well. But, you know, we've got a good depth at scrum half.
It's interesting as well, though, because Townsend talked when Scott Steele was mentioned against Wales, he talked about his work on the floor. Mm. So he talked about how keen he is to get involved in the breakdown. I think Townsend's got some, like, madcap plan that his nine is his new fetcher or something. It's the only logical thing for it. But no, I think speaking of scrum halves, I think we should really mention Ali Price again. Really, really controlled. I think maybe what's most noticeable is that there's none of the Ali Price of old, of the beating the chest and shouting this and that at everybody. It all just seemed much calmer, much more controlled. Everything was so much responsibility was going through him, but it worked. It was really good, really impressed with
and
him.
And the box kicking was spot on and accurate. And, you know, whereas before it would be, you know, 50-50, you know, everything, like you said, it was accurate, I think, is the way to describe the form. It's accurate and disciplined. And that's what you need from your nine.
Yep. You don't need cats at a rave.
No.
The thing is, you know, as well, he's got the pace. So if he does see an opportunity for like a little chip over the top, you know, he's going to be able to pull that off as well. So
I read in Kevin's stats that he'd only ran, so he had the ball 80 times and he'd only ran 4 times with it, which is definitely a change. He was definitely more of a sniper maybe a couple of seasons ago, but as you know, he can, you know, if there's a gap there, he'll go and find it. But I think we always talk about that like it's some sort of silver bullet play, like, oh, the scrum half's making a break, oh, we're keeping the defence honest. It's an international defence, guys. Like, they're sitting there, like, there's a back row forward going, if this scrum half makes a break, I am going to obliterate him, and it is going to be fun. He is my chow. I am happy with this.
You also need to remember we had 7 years of Greg Laidlaw, so sniping wasn't really an option.
Remember when he sniped against Argentina in 20... Oh,
that one time he did snipe was glorious.
I was at that game. I remember that snipe. Oh my goodness, it was.
Oh, he scored a sniper against Samoa.
Samoa, he did in the World Cup. Yeah, so Martin Bell's
twice. Yeah, 2015 and 19. Yeah,
Martin Bell's suggesting we need to mention Ben Velikot. Of course we do. We also, of course, need to mention Finlay Christie as well as being options.
And yes. Cam Redpath needs to get a mention just now as well, because inevitably by the fact he's not...
Is he qualified for Scotland, John?
and France and England, yes. And by the virtue of the fact that he doesn't play in Scotland and nobody watches the Premiership, he is automatically better than any other option we've ever had in the history of international rugby. So we should definitely call him up.
Gregor Townsend is a fool for not calling him
exactly.
up.
Exactly. Idiot. Yeah. Idiot. Why?
Always
why do we...
picking his favourites.
Honestly, picking people that he sees playing well, honestly, this will not catch on.
No, picking players that fit the system he wants to play rather than our best 15 players who you know would never gel in a month of Sundays.
Hashtag hog to 10.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a quick mention, Duhan van der Merwe was your man of the match. Ian, he was the official man of the match. I mean, I think his introduction to international rugby, it's lucky the way the fixtures have fallen, but the way that Townsend has handled his introduction has been very smart, I think, to have given him the full game against Georgia to kind of cut, and Van der Merwe talked about his nerves before that game, and it maybe took him a while to find his feet in that game, especially when he had like 10 Georgians on his back every single time he got the ball. Then the Wales game to kind of come in late into the game when, you know, legs are tiring, and then have the full 8 against Italy, he looked, you could see the difference in his confidence. He was breaking tackles, he was coming in, both wingers were coming in looking for work. I mean, when is Darcy Graham never looking for work? Like a perpetual job seeker on the pitch. Give us a job. But no, I mean, that's exciting, I think, to see how well he's come on in those three games, Ian.
Yeah, me, when I was getting left back from the last jam session, me, Rona Sweeting and Ross McDowell were talking about it in the car. And, you know, he's just something different to wingers we've had before. Because, you know, maybe we had Lament, who is a bit of a big bruiser, or say someone like Nicky Walker, but they didn't have just that direct flat line speed that he's got. Mm. So he's got flat line speed, and he's also an absolute monster. I think one of the most impressive contributions for me was when, I think it was only, we'd only just taken the lead, and there was an Italian kick went deep. He picked it up only a couple of metres from the line, and you're like, he's in coffin corner, this is risky. Instead, he blasts into the middle of the pitch in the 22, takes out a lock and a tight head prop, and then it sets up an easy exit. There were some very good performances, but Duhan is just, I mean, he eats metres. You know what I mean? Yeah. Was it 8 carries, 140 odd metres?
10 carries, yeah. Average 14.
Twice as much as Hogg. And, you know, Hogg's picking, you know, he's taking a lot of kick receipts, and, you know, he's got maybe 10, 15 metres before anyone even tries to get him. Duhan's just like, who's there? All right, smash you out of the way.
Hitting rocks as well.
Yeah, I was a wee bit concerned with one of the rocks he hit, because he seemed to throw a couple of shoulders in.
Yeah, there was a swinging shoulder, wasn't there?
Yeah.
The commentary team picked up on it as well.
I think that's what happens when your head coach is Richard Cockerell, you pick up a few things.
it seems very impressive, very impressive.
So France up next. We don't know who the team is yet. There's now... Ian and I got very excited because breaking news at the end of last week's podcast was that the France squad was announced, and it was it wasn't the strongest of squads, and we got really excited. Then France versus Fiji got called off because Fiji got a number of the Fiji squad have got coronavirus. So France
have
were awarded. We'll come on to that. So France have been awarded the 28-0 win. So they got a bonus point try win. So they're top on the table at the minute because the game was cancelled. That's in the tournament rules. So everyone signed up to that beforehand. The team that have got the Rona don't win. I think that's, you know, they're the ones that have had to forfeit. They can't raise a team. And I think that's the fairest you can do in the current circumstances. It's a shame it has to be Fiji, but that's the fairest you can do. So France all of a sudden now have all their players back available to them. Because it agreed with the French top 14 teams that they would rotate the squad so that some of them would be available for matches. So obviously Anton Dupont's back. Roman Entomac was back, but he's now injured. So that's good news. Not because I would be worried about Roman Entomac normally, but you know, given we've lost our two fly halves, there does need to be some levelling of the playing field. And as we established last week, I think it was, you know, Ali Price is better than Roman than Anton Dupont. In terms of his speed at the base of a rock.
2 weeks ago. Yep. Yes. So we're fine. So we'll win.
We'll be fine. The other news though is that 28 or 29 Fijians, Ian, have got coronavirus.
29 of the Fijian squad. It's like they've been going about licking discarded masks. How do you get that many in a squad? I mean, the problem is
that the moment you get a case, what, three or four cases, and I know they've got bubbles, but they're doing contact training. The moment you get three or four cases, you know, it's, what is it, a 14-day incubation period?
Five or 6 day incubation period, yeah. I believe it is.
So it's going to, I mean, that's just going to, the moment you get four or five, it's going to rattle through your squad and your coaching team. Yeah. So it's, yeah. It's not good news. So Italy, Fiji's been called off already. I think realistically, I think we're probably Scotland, Fiji's looking on a sugary peg at the minute.
It's not going to happen.
Nah.
They should do that anyway, just for sporting integrity.
Yes.
If they're giving France and Italy bonus point wins against them.
Or they need to give us a 28-0 head start.
There we go. I think that's fair.
I think, to be fair, I don't think we'd struggle to get a bonus point win against a team of Fijians trying to recover from coronavirus, wheezing away at the side of the pitch. Dolo having it, you know, got lads not carrying on water bottles but carrying on asthma inhalers for them.
But that would be peak Scotland, though.
That would be. We are the only team that
I'd rather ball in one hand, coughing into the other, punching over the.
So, yes, so there we go. So, yeah, it's not looking good for Fiji and the Autumn Nations, which is a shame because we would have all have loved to have seen them play, just because they're wonderful to watch. Even when they lose, they're still wonderful to watch.
And the return of Nadolo.
Yeah, I know.
Reversed his international retirement.
Yeah, there is a, I can't remember the name of the Daniel Leo has done, who is a former Samoan international, has done a documentary which is available on Amazon Prime. It's free, which I was very excited about that. I think it's free if you've got an Amazon Prime subscription, about the exploitation of the Pacific Island rugby.
Oceans Apart,
well done.
Ian Wallace was recommending it to me earlier today.
Yeah, Oceans Apart, so that's worth looking out. It's on Vimeo as well, I think. So if you want to watch that, looks like a very interesting watch. They've interviewed Brett Gosper. I think it looks like they get into the office of Frank Vahamina, who was the former head of Fijian rugby. Oh, no, is it Frank? No, Frank's the president, I think.
Frank's the president.
President for life is Frank.
Yep.
So it's not just looking at it from the point of view of how the Northern and, you know, other and the big tier one nations exploited, but also the kind of exploitation and corruption from within Pacific Island rugby. So that'd be a really interesting watch at the minute. So if you had time to spare, if you were going to watch Italy, Fiji, then maybe stick that on instead.
That's a good show.
I think is there anything else we need to cover? I mean, the France game is a bit of a hard one to call, I think. I don't want to, you know, I was caught a wee bit cocky last week with we don't need to worry about Italy. I'm not worried about France in the sense of we're going to get a pasting. I think we'll be there or thereabouts in the game, but I think it's going to be hard to call, Ian. It's maybe an opportunity, I suppose, to kind of put away some of the doubt that's been cast on Scotland's win at Murrayfield in earlier this year, that we're, you know, there's a lot of French fans on social media saying, ah, but if Mohamed Houard hadn't punched Jamie Ritchie in the face, if Romain Entermac and Antoine Dupont had stayed on the pit, you know, had got injured, I think, then we would have won. So it's maybe a chance to kind of address that.
Yeah, you know, obviously sports fans love to throw shade. I believe the kids use that phrase nowadays, other ones. But the thing is, like, Houas only has himself to blame for punching Jamie Ritchie.
Yep.
For Entermac going off, well, guess what? We didn't have Finn Russell, so, you know, balancing the books there. And to be honest, like, what's that big winger's name? Damien Pennell. I think he scored the first one, didn't he?
Yeah.
He did. That came off the back. That was, like, basically France's first attack, and it came off an excellent cross-kick from Dupont. I mean, even at the start, I think it was Paul Valença and Sebastian Crow. One of them was lucky not to get red carded for tipping Grant Gilchrist on his head.
Yeah.
And Scotland ended, well, Scotland were arguably the better team in that. You know, Olive on late try sort of took some of the shine off the scoreboard. But Scotland, it was a very good performance for Scotland. You know, regardless of even when it was 15-15, we were in that game and arguably the better side, even though we were behind on the scoreboard. So I'm not that scared, to be fair. You know, obviously France are excellent, but so are we on our day, so let's see what happens.
Yeah. Yep. John, you think that's fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're in a better position. I think the fixtures worked out quite well for us, particularly with losing our fly halves against Wales. Duncan Weir has a game under his belt at international level, has international renaissance. So let's see if Slam Dunk the Funk can get us running about the pitch and guide us to victory.
Yep.
Just had one last bit of news.
Yep.
Adam Ash has joined the team, which sounds like a fluorescent cocktail you get in a Wetherspoons.
He has, yes.
Glintinis. Yes. Sounds
the
like also
Giltinis.
Is it the Giltinis?
In Los Angeles.
Yeah. I looked it up to see if it was an actual cocktail, but the badge is like a martini glass. So
yeah.
It's like, this is going to be an interesting team. This
I mean,
like
I can only imagine the, you know, the rabbit holes that one can fall down in LA if you are looking to, you know, for self
a weed dispensary.
Or have, you know, looking for help from it. There'll be plenty of self-help gurus willing to take money in exchange for their wisdom in LA.
And I'll be like, oh, he's a European herbal healthcare specialist.
Yeah,
oh, that's true, yes.
Oh, European, huh? That's what, have you ever read Arnie's autobiography? It talks about him and his mate who had no idea how to, like, do any kind of, like, brickwork or anything. They were, like, European-style roofers. So all these, like, rich housewives would pay them extra to be like, oh yeah, we got some Europeans in.
I kind of wish Silicon Valley was still running because
show.
It was a great show, yeah, but I can imagine, like, an episode with Adam Ash in it, like, just coming in as the CBD expert and,
or
you know.
Ballers, the one with the rock.
Adam Ash does ballers.
Hollywood, yeah, maybe, Hollywood Ash, that's what you should start calling him.
Yeah, he's the new Vinnie Jones.
A reference to Hollywood Hogan vengeance. Grow a goatee and dye it black.
Yep. Starring a remake of Mr. Nanny.
Oh, if Adam Ash grows a blonde and black beard, that could be outstanding.
Yeah. Before we move on to Hans and the Ruck, we've got this from Daft Cravey, who said, don't forget that Duncan Weir made his triumphant return in the France game we won. So there's no fear there. So of course
it's
he
true.
Did.
Two minutes of
Weir before he had the hair of doom.
That's a powerful Samson-like hair he's got there. Right,
yep.
We're going to do this now. Yes, it's Hands in the Ruck. It's our Any Other Business section of the podcast where we ask you to submit your grumblings, your groans, your general dissatisfaction with the world at large. It can be rugby related, doesn't have to be. sometimes it's nice to have hands in the ruck. If it's your hands in the ruck doing the snaffling, then that can be a good thing as well. So just anything that's pleased you is also welcome. We've had a couple on our super secret social media group that you can get involved in if you're a Patreon. Dougie Lowe, and we've touched on this point already, but Dougie Lowe says, why is there so much animosity towards Chris Harris? I thought he played well, a couple of mistakes aside against Italy. Others seem to be allowed to make mistakes without getting criticism. But he's also asked, who's our best long-term option at number eight? Now, I'm not sure we know yet. Because Matt Ferguson got injured. Blade Thompson is doing okay.
But his waist is too thin.
His waist is too thin. Too thin for number eight.
Beautiful, beautiful beard, though.
He has got a goal. Maybe that's where... Maybe if I don't know. Is that where all the girth from his waist has got onto his beard?
Yeah, I
would have thought having a thin waist would be a good thing because there's less easy to grab.
Well, I know you would think so. It's manscaping. Like manscaping, yeah. But so for that, this is a, we joke about him having a thin waist. This is what somebody said in our comments once about Blade Thompson, was his waist is too thin. As though that's a thing.
Makes him a good line-out option.
He's
easier to lift.
Wide hips, thin waist. Up you go.
I know.
You've been watching Strictly again, haven't you?
It was bad after our practice on Sunday when I was like, we need to finish up, guys, because need to get home for Strictly. Proper rock star.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't think we have an option eight. I think that's a problem.
If we're talking long-term option, Ferguson's the only young enough to be long-term.
There's always been a question mark, I suppose, about whether Sam Skinner potentially is an eight. I know there was talk early on that that's where Exeter see him long-term. He's got the ability to play lock and six, so whether or not he looks big enough now to play, he's certainly packed on the beef over lockdown. He's big enough to fit into that role, so he's an option, I guess. I think Dupree didn't. I mean, I'm not sure. Was Dupree injured this weekend? Do we know? Was there any word on that? Was it just a rotational kind of decision?
Yeah, he was just. He was just taken out of the squad basically for Haining to cover both. Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, we'll see. It'd be interesting because I think that there is talk that they're going to do. There is going to be an element of rotation throughout these five games. Possibly four, depending on what happens with Fiji, but there needs to be an element of rotation there. So whether or not, you know, Dupree comes in, he did well against Wales, I thought, when he came off the bench.
But in terms of long-term, though, you know, Dupree's probably 29, 30.
Yeah.
Then there's the enigma that is Magnus Bradbury.
Schrodinger's Bradbury, is he a good player, is he not?
It's such an odd one because, you know, we've seen him have great games, and he's one of these guys who we keep hoping will push on, because obviously you get brought in, you know, early doors by Vern Cawthorn. Mm-hmm. He was told to go away, work on his defence and what have you.
And he worked on his falling over and smashing his head open skills.
Yes, yeah, proved himself to be a little bit irresponsible. But, you know, young lad makes mistakes.
Yeah. Who amongst us has not ended up in the back of an ambulance on the Royal Mile on a Saturday night?
Unbelievably me.
No comment.
Yeah.
No, but Bradbury, did any of you see the Edinburgh Leinster game yesterday?
I did not subject myself to it.
Yeah, I didn't.
I was going to about halfway through the first half, and then I saw how it was going and decided not to.
See, when I said I wasn't enjoying doing it, I'd just like to clarify this. It wasn't the fact that I was doing Edinburgh Sport, it was just the fact that I was watching Leinster once again tear apart a Scottish team, and with consummate ease. Edinburgh were really poor, and it's like when you looked for the big guys like, say, Purgos or Bradbury to maybe step up and, like, you know, steady the ship, they failed dramatically. Yeah. Nobody seemed to take control of that.
And that's a big, massive failing. I mean, we've got Craig Manson's brought second mention tonight for Craig. That's he's earned his £5 Patreon money. He said, this could be a general point on our hands in the ruck. I'm trying to stay positive, but with the home nations playing for the next 6 months at least, are any teams in the Pro 14 able to take on Leinster? I hate foregone conclusions or being this negative. No, there's the answer. But they probably could win the league with their second team. I need a hug. I think we all need a hug, Craig.
They will win the league with their second team. There's no doubt of that. Yeah, sadly, you know, this is what happens when you've got a world-class academy system, money coming out your ears, full support of your government.
Well, yeah. therein, therein lies an issue. Money. Because when I'd put my match report up, I don't actually know his real name, but Phil Rugby BB on Twitter. He came back. I'd said that Leinster had a poor season in 14-15. Look at them now. He showed me a screenshot of the IRFU's accounts, which showed that after 14-15, the player wage bill went up by 6 million euros. So obviously, they took the Leinster booing crap thing quite seriously. They won't be able to do that anymore. They've already... Phil Brown had spoken about how they would, the pot would be dry by March. They would probably have to tap money in January. Yeah. They've already taken, was it a 25 million euro?
16 million euro
loan off the Irish government. That's, Irish rugby's in dire financial straits. Yeah. Let's not kid ourselves here, because I mean, I'm always amazed that they've been able to afford it, because the Aviva is smaller than Murrayfield. Mm-hmm. So their turnover can't be greater unless they're charging daft amounts with the D4 crowd. And also the fact they've got four professional teams, well, three professional teams in Connaught, who they treat like the ginger stepchild in the attic. And you know, they are spending a lot of money which they do not have anymore.
No. I think that's the big thing. I think there is a kind of, if you look view this through a kind of long term lens, I think that's right. I think Scottish rugby's, we assume, and I know there's issues with the accounts at the minute. And you know, again, we always say keep an eye on the offside line for that, because David Barnes is always all over the accounts and does a fairly good job of explaining things. And Kevin Miller, actually, as well, I think, as a trained accountant, is fairly good at these. It kind of also kind of coming at it from an accountant's point of view as well, so he's worth a follow on Twitter. But generally speaking, I think Scottish rugby financially is in a better position than the other unions. So longer term, it'll be interesting to see how this pans out. So yes, Ireland have got all these young kids that are coming through their school systems, but is that a, you know, is that a house built on sand, John? Joe, that's likely to collapse at the moment that the money runs dry?
I'm going to sound awful here, but hopefully, I am looking forward to, if that was to happen, I would pay Tim Visser amounts of money to watch Stephen Ferris's face. I would ask Stephen Ferris to give me a message telling me how sad he is. That
he probably only charges £7 at that point as well.
I hope so, because like I might even ask for two messages then, because I dislike Stephen Ferris somewhat.
I bet they're delighted they didn't get the World Cup now. Because it would have cost them a bloody fortune. Yeah. They probably would.
And whose fault is it that they didn't? Who was getting blamed for it? Oh yeah, that's us.
For it, isn't it?
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah.
We saved some money. Daft Craig on Twitch asking, "Are Leinster the Pro 14 Saris?" I think even kind of questionable money aside, yes.
I made that equivalence yesterday on my own Facebook. Except you know, everything seems to be above board. Well, it seems to be above board.
There's no. I thought there were rules against the Pro 14.
I thought we were leaving the EU because there was rules against state aid. So how come the Irish government are able to prop up the rugby teams? It's all a lie. Brexit's a lie. There you go.
We're done in the idea of investment in the future well-being of their children.
They've all got shares in the Aviva.
Aye.
I think, come back to your point though, Ian, I think there is an element though of concern, and I know we touched on this with the Glasgow game a few weeks ago, that if the likes of Bradbury and Purgos can't show up in a game against Leinster, that's a worry. So how come inexperienced youngsters playing for Leinster can come and step up when experienced, you know, internationalists in Scotland can't? And it's, you know, I've no doubt in that the Irish, you know, the Irish system brings through quality players, but you know, that Edinburgh team had good players in it. The Glasgow team that got tanked by Ulster had good players in it. This is a mentality problem and a coaching problem. It's not necessarily a 100% a talent problem, I don't think.
No, both teams, you know, both the Ulster and Leinster victories you spoke of there, the defending was absolutely abysmal. Both sides through their scrum halves, John Cooney for Ulster and Luke McGrath for Leinster, with the clock nearly dead, you know, the Scottish side's just switched off and they scored opportunistic drives. There is definitely a sort of leadership or a mentality or a focus issue. And it's not going to be pretty. I mean, this thing like Edinburgh, I gave Man of the Match to Ali Miller, and I'd say the second best player on the pitch for Edinburgh was probably Andrew Davidson. So it's two pretty young guys who don't see a lot of game time. They're the ones who impress most, and not just because it's they're the young guys who you maybe set a lower bar for. They were genuinely the best two players on the pitch. Yeah, so it's a big concern. This is, is the season even going to get finished?
Yeah.
I mean, if it is, Leinster going to win it at a cancel, they might as well just can it and just give, like Dave Rennie said last year, might as well just can it and give the title to Leinster now.
I think we do view the season a little bit as a development season. It's that opportunity to bring in younger players. It would be more beneficial if they were brought into winning teams and teams where, you know, the leadership, the guys that you would turn to for leadership, the Ryan Wilsons, hadn't gone completely AWOL. You know, and it's understandable. We've all had periods where we've gone AWOL, you know, mentally over the last 9, 10 months, however, 11 months, however long it's been that we've been in, you know, the living in the current circumstances. But
14 years.
14 years of the Rona. But, you know, and I think we can give a little bit of slack for that, but, you know, we're not living in normal times and people must be under strain at home as well as at work. We've all, you know, we're all feeling it, but if you're seeing it as a development season, you need the leadership team to step up and help the youngsters through, John.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, there is an argument to be made for it being a development season through, you know, the way recruitment kind of almost failed both teams, and it would give me some sense of hope if it looked like there was a game plan, and it looked like there was some sort of commitment to that development, and I can't see that yet. And, you know, it might be the case that it's coming, but I don't necessarily see that. And, you know, I'm pointing the finger mainly at Glasgow here. I'm seeing the teams they're putting out. Yeah, they're teams by necessity a lot of the time. You know, there's players in there that they have to be because they're the last man standing almost. But, you know, there's a couple of young guys that maybe not had a look in yet. And there's a real lack of leadership from people that you would really be expecting to be doing more. I think from a Glasgow perspective, the only person who's really come out of any of this looking okay was Tom Gordon.
Yeah,
he looks more and more a very decent prospect.
Gordon and
it's,
Shug.
It's just really
Gordon and Shug Jones.
Yes.
But, yeah,
yeah, of course.
That's
yeah.
Shug Jones, who's not a fullback, who now is a fullback.
Who should be nailed on 13 for Scotland just because he's best in that position.
12? 12, mate? He should be playing at 12.
He should be playing everywhere.
I hear he plays 10.
I've got one tweet and then we can move on to your hands and the rock guys. Paul has said his thoughts for Fiji, of course, but are we going to end up second bottom in our group despite being the only team to win a game of rugby? That could well happen.
Yeah, kids.
Yeah.
You do wonder, like, if Italy and France were to get together now and say, do you know what? We don't really need to play these games, do we? Then, yeah. You know, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Is it the 1974 or the 1978 Football World Cup where that happens? Like, both teams found out if they drew 0-0, they'd go through the knockout.
Just passed the ball.
Yeah, for 80 minutes. I think it was Austria and maybe Czechoslovakia or something like that.
Yeah.
Corruption, down with this sort of thing.
Go on, John. What's your hands on that then, John?
So, I was going to be all positive and be like, "Oh, Argentina, woo, go Argentina!" But I'm going to take the Argentina thing, and I'm going to have a wee moan again about the Scottish mentality. Lots of people congratulating Argentina on their historic victory over the All Blacks. second team. brilliant result, you know, obviously good for Argentina, great for international rugby. Great to see that even development teams can, from the best nations, can be beaten by first full strength first team tier one nations. What's the Scottish fans getting a bit salty about it, going, oh, you know, look at Argentina doing what we've never managed to do. Ah, we've not beaten the All Blacks. We've not really had as many shots at it recently as Argentina have. You know, Argentina are maybe showing the benefit of playing in a championship with South Africa, Australia, and New Zealand. They were maybe showing the opportunity of playing against Scotland have played against second string New Zealand teams before. I don't think we've played against a second string New Zealand team the year after a World Cup cycle, when you've had lots of players kind of dropping out and they really are a team in transition. Now, the All Blacks as a team in transition is a very different prospect to most, but it was still not a vintage All Blacks team.
No, I think probably the one time we did do that, I think there was that game where, this is the one where Tommy Seymour got the intercept off Richie McCaw, where Dan Carter was coming back.
Yep.
That's probably the closest we've got. That's not the closest we got to winning, because it was the last time we played them was the closest we got to winning. But
Laidlaw kicking
the one with Laidlaw kicking was probably the closest we've come, I think, to facing a proper New Zealand team in transition where they were there for the taking, albeit they had Dan Carter and Richie McCaw on that side.
Well, yeah,
but they were both come back from sabbaticals, I think, off where they were. I don't know what they did, travelled the world or something for a year on.
Dan Carter was hanging out in LA with Adam Ash or something.
And McCall was playing at Blindside. And that was, I think that was Finn Russell's first start for Scotland. Yeah. And he actually played Carter off the park. Yeah, that was that's the game that I famously left my mate's wedding to go and watch.
Nice. well done.
Oh, no, I even got him to move the time of the wedding so that I could go. Because, well, there's a longer story to all this. It makes me seem like I'm the bad guy saying I bolted from his wedding, but he said it was going to be a short thing, starting at like 10 a.m. And I was like, right, well, I've got 200 quid worth of tickets for the Scotland All Blacks game. I can sell them if you want. He's like, no, it's fine, you can go. And then 4 days before the ceremony, which my mum was conducting, by the way, because she's a registrar, he was like, yeah, it's going to start at 3, and the All Blacks game, Scotland All Blacks kicked off at 5. I was like, you, lots of swear words. How am I supposed to get from Glasgow to Edinburgh in an hour and a half? You said it was going to be at 10 o'clock. I offered to sell those tickets. So he got it moved to 2. My mum rattled through the ceremony in 20 minutes. So she turned to me and said, right, there's my car keys. On you go.
Was this before or after she pronounced the man and wife? It was like, here's the car keys, Ian. I now pronounce you man and wife. Or was
just leave the rings there, son. There you go.
Yeah. You've done your bit. Scoot. On you go.
Yeah. And then I got booed at the reception. But there wasn't meant to be a reception in the first place either. And then there was a reception, and apparently I got booed at the reception.
So. You get booed but for leaving?
I got to go and see Dan Carter play at Murrayfield. So
badly. So, you got to see Dan Carter play badly at Murrayfield is what you got to see.
I think to finish the point is Scotland fans should not be so envious of the successes of other teams. Argentina are a very good side and got the opportunity to beat the All Blacks, and I think it just is a salty look from us that we look at this so enviously.
Yes, I think that's a very good point. I'm trying to. What was the? Who was the? Who's the skipper? It's the. I'll get the name right. It's
Pablo Motera.
Pablo Motera. In the words of Pablo Motera, that is not respect. As he said on the pitch, this is what, if everyone's seen this, he's talking to the referee of the game. There's a bit of a kind of a stramash on the pitch.
A bit of handbags,
and he's getting talking to from the referee, and he says they're not showing us respect, and then he just taps his own chest and says that is not respect. It's a great gift going under that.
That's actually you right. Know. Hands in the rock.
Go on
because it triggered the respect klaxon.
I was going to go with the respect klaxon, but I had a feeling that tonight it's going to... No, wrong song. I had a feeling you were going to go for the respect klaxon, so I thought I will graciously passed.
What he said was, they're kicking my guys, they show no respect. He then pointed to his badge on his chest and said, I play for my country.
My country. Yeah. Fantastic. I think when he accused, now I've watched the little tussle back and I look to see if there is any contact to the face of one of the Argentina players in the sort of ensuing breakdown. There isn't. So Matera's basically... Now, I've got no issue with Pablo Matera. Pablo Matera is a brilliant player. And, you know, what he said is fine. You know, him saying, you know, he should be respected. Not a bother at, but it's just the... Because it triggered the respect, you know, the oh, the rugby values, respect crowds. It's like, oh, okay. I mean, even, like... No, Bruce Aitchison, who messaged earlier, the most positive and optimistic human being in the universe, even he's fed up of the rugby values crowd, right? This is how much you have driven people to madness.
You've made Bruce Aitchison angry.
Don't make like him angry.
But there's no, I mean, Squid Rugby had highlighted that. No, wasn't it? It was somebody else. He retweeted somebody.
Jessica Hayden,
of course, who tweeted the absolute pile on Facebook of this guy who yep. just said, "Why can yeah. someone explain to me why England are wearing blue, Twickenham aye. And yeah. Georgia in white?" And like, you know, rather than someone say, "Oh, actually, it's tradition in rugby. If there's a kit clash, that you wear the home team wear the change kit." That's all somebody needed to say. And somebody said, oh, yep. I'm new to rugby. That's really interesting. I didn't know that. Thank you. And then you got, but all you end up with is a load of people going, are you an idiot?
You're over from the football.
You're over from the football. You don't know anything about rugby.
Why do they always look the same? The people who say things always look the same. They're all like guys in their 40, like between the age of like 45 and 60.
Can you like, take a selfie? Oh, yeah. Take a selfie like this, looking down the camera with a chin tucked in.
They can't crop their profile picture properly, so you know they've cut out one of their Grand Wayne's heads.
There's always a flag somewhere, or a puppy.
Oh, yes.
A poppy or a puppy?
A poppy and a puppy. Often a puppy and a puppy.
A puppy wearing a poppy.
And the bio says something like, love my country, my dog, my kids and my wife, in that order.
free thinker
aye. Free speech.
Brexit means Brexit.
Yeah. There's a perfect Venn diagram of the people who think who kind of believe in rugby respect and people who also act like that. We've talked about this numerous times on the podcast. I've written articles about it before on the blog. It's complete nonsense that this kind of crap exists in rugby. Yeah, you know, you can't even, you know, punching and kicking folk on the rugby field. Ah, but we all shake hands in the clubhouse afterwards.
So it was Jessica Hayden. A few days before this incident, I'd referred to the rugby values speak something quite rude on Twitter. And Jessica Hayden said that is the best description I've heard of it. It was group onanism patter, is how I read it.
Very well put, Mr. Hayden.
Very good, except, well done.
Except I didn't say onanist, I said what that means.
Yeah.
Yes. Get your dictionaries out, guys.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kids, ask your parents what that means, kids.
Dictionaries. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's exhausting, I think, sometimes. The utter crap.
It's just
Wendy ball. It's like... I hate that word.
It's just not. It's not a good look, is it? I mean,
the thing is, calling it Wendy Ball is very sexist as well, isn't it?
It's sexist and homophobic.
Yep. And the same people calling it Wendy Ball are the same people that were jumping up and down when Scotland qualified for the Euros. So it's all. Well,
do you see as well when Nicolas Sanchez went to hit one of his penalties towards the end of the first half? A bunch of Scots must have broken into the stadium in Sydney because there was quite heavy booing.
Oh, that'd be all the expats.
Yeah.
Just keeping the tradition alive, lads.
This one's for the Falklands.
So what I haven't told you is actually on the back of my hashtag rugby values escapades a few years ago, I've actually started a secret covert group of basically Scots across the world who will infiltrate all rugby stadiums, particularly Irish ones, actually, and will boo viciously at my
it's not
orders.
Rugby stadiums, just anybody who's kicking anything.
Anything, yeah. Cannon in the street. Maybe
we should do that for our cameo. Are you going to kick something? We will, for a fee,
we will boo
your kicks.
Who do you want to boo your kicks?
Yeah.
I mean,
kick
it.
You're going around to a car showroom to kick some tyres. We'll boo. We'll be there booing.
There's a video.
You call that tyre pressure? Boo. That's no 32 PSI. Boo.
Oh, so many videos in mine now. It's a shame we're in lockdown.
Oh, this is great. Now, Daff Craig on Twitch. Yes, sir, I can boo you.
Oh, yes.
Oh, well done. Well done. Yes.
See, I knew, and that's the reason why we're starting to do these live, because we didn't get gold like that before we used to record on our own.
Magnificent stuff. Take a bow.
Somebody would have to approve that in the comments. It'd be 2 days late, and, you know.
Magnificent. I doth my cap.
Yeah, my hands on that was going to be Argentina. Really, I mean, I guess it is. There was a guy that the tweet from the Welsh guy. Did you see this old Welsh guy again? Another one of the guys that kind of take a proper selfie on his profile, who's moaning about the fact that, well, he mentioned the Scottish football team as well. The Scottish football team, and then the Argentina guy struggling to hold in the emotions and saying, "In my day, men didn't cry."
Was a Kiwi guy.
Was it Kiwi? Was he?
Keith Quinn is his name, because he was very close to being my hands in rock and roll. Yeah, Dustin Johnson, Argentine's greeting, and also I think he said why they wearing pink boots type of person.
Yeah,
when men were men kind of thing.
And then he later climbed down from it and said, "Oh, I cry myself sometimes. I was just wondering." It was a general wondering, but he didn't delete his original tweet. So that bothered me. I think my main thing, though, is there's a lot of people accusing me of being a conspiracy theorist for suggesting that Tommy Allen had been taken off the pitch in suspicious circumstances. Now,
yes.
I've put my detective hat on, folks, again, after the film. We did this with Finn Russell. I'm not doing music anymore because I'm worried about takedown notices from. I had one the other day from on Twitter because I'd used some Barbara Streisand, and I'm not losing my Twitter profile due to Barbara Streisand. So we're not. Unfortunately, there won't be any. When Jaco van der Valk plays, we can't play the van der Valk theme tune, so you'll have to get your kicks elsewhere. But anyway, so I put my detective hat on. So cue the Dragnet theme tune. Now. I am open to the fact he cut his knee open, right? The bottom of the advertising hoardings, you watched, inexplicably someone's decided that sticking a bit of metal out and poking it towards the pitch is a good idea when you've got players sliding towards the sideline. I've no doubt he sliced his knee open. It was held together. Now, the issue I've got and what I think then happens, I think he was stitched up pitch side because he was back on, which you can do and happens, you know, quick couple of stitches, you're back on the pitch, because he was back on the pitch for the restart for the second for the second line out after the penalty, and then there's blood on his knee and he's off as a blood replacement. Now, at some point during the long discussion between Wayne Barnes and the referee, but there was a discussion with the Italian doctor where he said, no, you can't bring on any more subs. You've used all your substitutes up. You can't bring any more subs on unless he's a head replacement or a blood replacement. So they were thinking he's going off injured. The Italians said that he's going off injured. Now, the Italians obviously know the rules. There's something fishy going on when later on he turns up on the sidelines with a cut knee. He's going off as a blood replacement.
Because Sorry.
I was just going to say they are being quite cautious with the whole blood thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
as well. So obviously, I mean, we've all seen players in the past that have got a wee trickle of blood here and there and maybe don't come off. But, you know, they were being really careful with the blood thing, and I think they had cleaned them up. Now, whether the stitches haven't held or what, right, fair enough. We'll maybe say benefit of the doubt there, but he was struggling, like he had injured his knee as well. Yeah. And you know, anyone that's had a decent cut in your knee, it can be body sore, and you know, you don't necessarily want to be running full tilt at an international defence at that point with such a sore knee. So is it convenient that it was open, you know, an open wound and it was bleeding, and they thought, right, good opportunity to get him off? Possibly.
I mean, but Martin Bell says Tommy Allen didn't go to the moon either. No, I mean, I think it was Stanley Kubrick, his makeup artist, obviously put the blood onto his knee to make it look fake. That's what I'm claiming. But no, it was strange. I mean, obviously Sir Dr. James Robson had concerns because it was him that had flagged it with the referee, and yeah, he was there at the sideline. So there was something not right about it. And, you know, I'm not necessarily, it may all be above board, and it may all be, but the chain of events that led up to him being a blood substitute didn't go in the way that you would expect to in that way. It was clearly an injury replacement. To me, it was clearly an injury replacement rather than a blood replacement. But, I mean, the stigmatium were not on at 10, so it's not exactly like they were benefiting from anything. And the game was well lost. So
Having chilled for 25 minutes, yeah. Interesting. We've got a couple of very strange comments going on.
Well, Ian Kerr is asking you, John, can you play the guitar?
I actually can play those guitars, yes. I can also play go the other way. I can also play those drums that are sitting behind me as well. On our first band practice, Ian can attest that I picked up the guitarist's guitar whilst he was out at the toilette. I went and picked it up, hashtag COVID secure, and might have started smashing some Master of Puppets out on it. So
there you go. I've got my tuba just out of shot, but I'm not playing it because I'm directly below my daughter's bedroom.
So. Pretty sure there must be a tuba section on one of these songs we're playing, Ian.
Yeah. I've got a bong up there.
a bongo, you mean?
That's what I said. Aye. Oh, did my microphone cut out?
Yeah, it did just cut out. Aye. Yeah.
But there's only room for one drummer, so that's why I play bass now.
One singer, one song. That's what they always sing at the clubs. Shout out the clubs.
My mate's bass.
Except we went two singers, one song.
Oh,
we've got
wonderful.
Rona and Ross.
On harmonies.
We're really going to have to do a version of Islands in the Stream, aren't we?
Oh, Ross is desperate to that, and he is so beautiful that we probably can't deny him.
I'd like to say
the handsomest man in Scottish rugby.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, he gives Hugh Jones a run for his money. That's all I'm saying.
How much does Ross charge for a cameo?
To be honest, I mean, I reckon we could get him pretty cheap. He's especially if you get Rona to ask him, because geez, oh, she's terrifying when she's got the rage. I sent the guys a video. I managed to capture Rona in full Stevie Nicks mode. It was fantastic. She was absolutely obliterating poor Ross.
Were you rushing or dragging?
It was like whiplash. It was so terrifying. And like, you can hear in the video, you can hear me nervously tapping a cymbal, going, yay, just domestic.
Order.
See, I love the fact we've got that we see the inner workings of Scottish rugby's Fleetwood Mac. It's one of the greatest jokes I've ever heard. Before we go and leave you there, it's the Flight of the Conchords episode where they say Fleetwood Mac, they made that album where they all split up with each other. So I said, rumours? No, it really happened.
Boom.
Yeah. And on that note, that's it for this week. Don't forget to go to manscaped.com and SRP in the checkout, and you'll get 20% off and free shipping on any of the products there. You'll also be helping us out as well. Go to the Patreon, sign up on your £3 a year, your £5 a month, and visit the blog, scottishrugbyblog.co.uk. We'll have full coverage of the France match and some other bits and bobs going up in the next few days as well. But for the moment, it is goodbye from me and goodbye from John and Ian.
Ciao.
Hey, folks.